Welcome to episode 129 of the Geocaching Podcast, Finds Before Hides, recorded live on November 10th, 2009. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can join our chat live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, which is 206-3503-GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Welcome back for another week of the podcast. Daryl, how have you been?
Oh, not too bad. You know, Saturday was one of those days that I'm sure you've had a few times before that you just kind of really don't want to go in and have to go into work to rebuild a server.
Yeah, those are bad.
Yeah, we had one of those servers that it was acting funny. It wasn't down or anything. It just wasn't acting right. And I had to do an upgrade, and I wasn't going to upgrade a system that was having some issues. So I ended up spending all morning Saturday, got up early and went into the office, took it down, got it reformatted, only to have the backup hard drive where I make my images for, anytime I do anything, I make an image of it once it's done. So I have something I can roll back to if necessary.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the drive died.
That's not good. That's not good at all.
No. So the bonus part is it lasted long enough that I got all of the files back off of it. I still had other backups other places, but I got all the files I needed off of it. And then it died when I was booting to get in to make the image. So it's like, okay, it's dead. I have an hour and a half that I was going to have to spend that I can now go home and go back to sleep.
Nice.
But you know what really sucked about it is that Dree went out caching with Team Legend 4 and Reef Rider. So they went out and got like 40-something caches, 50-something caches maybe? No, it was 40-something caches on Saturday. And I was at work or at home working on the podcast stuff. So, yeah, Saturday kind of sucked.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it was a beautiful week, at least a weekend, at least here.
Oh, it was absolutely gorgeous. And fortunately, Sunday I was able to get out. And we went to Schwartz Creek, which is just west of Flint, and got 54 finds for the day. Just kind of on, we know there's some caches in the area that we want to hit. We're going to go hit Schwartz Creek and then migrate our way up to Clio, which isn't too far away. And, we found 54 caches without really leaving the greater Schwartz Creek area, we'll call it. And it was a lot of fun. Just four of us, Bill from Team Legend 4, Reef Rider, Dree, and myself. And we managed to hit find number 3,000 and also our 1,000th find for the year. Plus a pretty cool camo job. Most of the stuff was fairly average cash kind of stuff. But one of them was a fairly typical type of camo that we've seen many, many times. But this one was just done better, and they'd spent a little bit of time on it. So we really appreciated it. And I did a tweet reel to kind of show off that someone actually, spent some time on a fairly common hide. Did you have a chance to look at that, by the way?
I actually did not yet. No, I will have to check it out.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's not much, but someone spent that little bit of extra time, made it nice. It's going to last a lot longer. So I encourage everyone to kind of check it out and get an idea for something they might do, obviously with permission. But it was very, very nice. My big problem, though, is that I couldn't use the DeLorme or the Magellan because of the changes in the geocaching.com GPX files. It seems it crippled both of the utilities to load it, and I'm not using GSAC. I'm just using their utilities. And also, it's not about the numbers. Seems to be having issues, and they've actually shut down the service until they can figure out what's going on. And I can't even go and confirm that I've not double logged or anything, because that's been the utility I've used for that.
Yeah, I did see that it's not about the numbers.com was down because of the changes of the files. And that's one of those things that I use to create my maps, my found maps on. And so for me, that's kind of a one of those things that I'm looking forward to see it back up.
Oh, definitely. We like that just because it's platform agnostic, I don't like using things that are limited to one platform, even though I do a lot of it. But, you know, that's been the real advantage to cloud for me. I can do it from any computer, anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about It's Not About the Numbers, you know, in addition to being able to do some on-site comparisons, which, it's nice, but it doesn't do as much as I'd like. And it does help fill in some of the gaps in what I wish that geocaching.com would put in. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to that coming back online. Now, I understand that some congratulations are in order for you.
That is true. Today, this afternoon, we went to the doctor to find out what we are having, whether a boy or a girl, and we're having a girl. So we've got two boys now, and we're going to have a girl. So it's interesting, all of the different emotions that I've had too, because it's like, you know, I know how to deal with boys. I've got two boys. Now I'm going to have to deal with a girl, you know, all of those things that go along with girls, but we're super, super excited.
Yeah. It's nice to have a little bit of an offset there. So it's not quite so much testosterone flying around.
And I think Julie will probably like that too, because there'll be another female in the house.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so bad probably for you, but for her, it would have been real bad to have four boys.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what her dad deals with. Her dad has, you know, four girls, and so he's got all girls. So, but it'll be a nice mix. We're super excited, and it is healthy, so we're good with that. Her name is Reagan, so we're going to have a Reagan in the family. And the other things we did, we moved my sister-in-law. She moved down. She got a new job and moved. And so we helped her move. Took the boys out and found a cache or two in the town. It's actually just one cache in the town that we were in there. So super, super busy weekend, but it was definitely a good one. So we did find out that we're having a girl and, you know, found a couple caches. So
excellent.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post them on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Recently, fellow cacher Sasmo wants to know, how many finds should new cachers have before placing their own? This is a hotly debated issue, with good points on both the pros and cons. My results show that about a third of those who replied said there should be no limit. Another third said, somewhere after 100 finds, new cachers could hide one of their own. So tell me, how many finds should new cachers have before placing their own? Want to find out more? Follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Well, that is actually the topic that we are going to be talking about tonight. We are going to be talking about how many caches should you find before you place your own caches? Because especially, I know a lot around here, we've seen a lot of caches that are, well, to be quite honest, they're not very good caches, and they're by people who have found one, two, maybe five caches. And in one case, I saw one recently that the cacher had only found like 17 caches maybe, but had like 72 hid. And that was just, to me, a little bit ridiculous. And so that brings up the question, you know, should there be a limit? If there's a limit, is it a hard limit? Does Groundspeak set that limit? Or is it just something we need to keep others accountable for? Daryl, I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first off, I'm going to say that we're probably never going to have a good answer for this one.
Oh, I agree. I definitely
but
agree.
But it's one that warrants some discussion, and I think it really depends a lot on the individual cacher. I don't like the idea of saying that you have to go and hide a cache or you know, find so many caches before you can go and hide a cache, just because there are a few people who are out there going out on their own, and you know, they had been under a family caching name. They're going to go out on their own to hide their own caches, and they may create an account for that. Or you might have, which as I understand goes against the rules, but you might have a group, you know, a caching collaborative that goes out and places some caches in a park system or something, and the park doesn't want to have the caches under an individual name. So there's a lot of good reasons that I can see for not having the hard limit from Groundspeak on you have to hide so many or find so many caches before you can hide. But I think there is a lot of merit to just internally kind of saying, well, if you don't have enough experience with finding caches, you're probably not going to be able to hide a cache as well. So what that number is, I don't really know. For us, I think we waited till about, I want to say about 50 or 60 caches before we placed our first one. And even then, I felt pretty comfortable with it, but I made some moves that I decided later would just take a little bit too much work to maintain and, you know, kind of scaled that back.
Well, I think that, I mean, those are all good things to remember, because I know for me, I always look at new caches when they're published, and especially if I've not seen the person before, you know, seen their caching name before, I like to go out and look at their profile and see, you know, what their stats are and stuff like that. And, you know, there's been a lot around here that I've seen that haven't had a lot of finds, and that always makes me go, ugh, you know, they need to go ahead and place some, or, you know, find some more before placing some. But then, you know, I look back at my own experience this summer. Well, I'm only experienced for a couple of things. When I started, and this summer, because this summer I helped my mother-in-law place a cache. She's found plenty of caches. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a handful of them. I mean, but she found a lot with us, and then created her own account and didn't necessarily go back and log all of the ones that we found together before she created her own account. But then I helped her go ahead and place it, but then it went ahead and put it under her name. So, I mean, she's had the experience of me, who's, you know, 400 and something caches under their belt, help them place it. But at the same time, it was under her account. So anyone looking at it would only know that it's her account, and she's only found on her account 10 or 12.
Yeah. And it does bear mentioning that a lot of people will help other cachers out. If you're looking to place your first hide, it's generally a pretty good idea to find a cacher in your area who you like their hides and they've done a few of them, and ask them for some help. And it's kind of like that mentoring program that we've mentioned many times on Cacher Maniacs and Cachers of the Roundtable. If you can set up some kind of mentoring program through a local organization, I think that really helps. But the one thing I really fear most about trying to put limits on you have to find so many before you hide is so many of these people are so anxious to get out there and place their first hide. And if they do, chances are these are people who are really going to be into the game. And as long as the experience isn't adversarial with the cachers, I think they could turn into very prolific hiders, and we could see a whole lot more quality caches as they have the chance to exercise that skill.
Well,
so
I think
you got to be really nice when you try to tell them that their cache is subpar too, because, you know, you got to tell them, well, you know, hey, thanks for your hide. You know, I'm happy to see that you're out there hiding, but you might want to reconsider the container or the way that it's hidden, because we have had these kind of issues in this area.
Well, and I think that goes back to, you know, my first hide. I know that my first hide was shortly after we started caching, and I'm sure I made mistakes on it, but I was anxious to get out there. But, you know, at the same time, like, it's some choices that I've made this recently too. I knew that there was a cache here that one that was placed by someone who had like 70 some find or places, but only like 15 finds. You know, I was going to say something to him and make, cause especially that cache, when looking at the Google map, it looked like it was on private property. It definitely was on private property, and it didn't say anywhere about getting permission. You know, I was going to say something to them, especially since, you know, we had that experience that we played earlier in the podcast about the person getting chewed out by the llama farm owner or alpaca farm owner. I was going to email them and just say, hey, look, you know, we've had a lot of really bad experiences lately with people that are placing caches without permission. You know, have you got permission for this? And I decided not to email them. And the only reason I decided not to is because it was a fine line between being a jerk and being helpful. And I know that there's a certain cacher who, when we placed a cache fairly early on, ripped on us for placing it where we did and was really a jerk, and it is in the way he said it. So I didn't want to become like him, because I've all through my caching experience didn't like the fact that he ripped on me like that and was treated me like I was inferior. And so I didn't want to do that to this person. I wasn't really sure how to say it without being that jerk. So I just decided not to. Now, I think another thing is we're seeing a lot of these cashers who are placing subpar caches, if you will, because they're new cashers, and all they've really seen is the caches, a lot of urban caches. They've never, and I'm not saying urban caches can't be great, but they've never seen other caches, you know, a lot of other caches, because there's not so many of them like there was back in the day when I first started and when you first started, Daryl, that are, you know, big ammo cans in the woods and caches, you know, kind of how caching was started. I mean, I don't want to say that that's what it was meant to be, because it's a pretty fluent game. It changes every real quick. But, you know, they haven't had a lot of chance to experience those other caches, and so that we get caches that are kind of subpar.
Yeah, well, I think as time goes on, we're going to see more and more caches being introduced that aren't that, real effort was placed in hiding that cache. It's more the quick, you know, I'm going to put a cache here that's going to last for a year or so. And when people first started hiding caches, it was designed to be someplace interesting. It was a cool hide. It was built to last for a while. And in many cases, you just don't have that option anymore. Around here, those places have been taken, and they continue to be taken by the better caches, the better older caches. By percentage, you know, you're going to find a higher percentage as we go forward of the, you know, for lack of a better term, the slingers.
Well, and I want to say this too, if anyone's in our chat room and wants to put any input on this, give us a call, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. If you're on the phone, go ahead and press *8 on your keypad or the request to talk in the chat room, and we'll go ahead and get you on the show. If you're listening to this later on and we're not doing this live, go ahead and give us a call on our voicemail line. That number is 206-350-3GPS, and just tell us what you think about this. Should there be a hard limit? Should there not?
And also give us some feedback too about when it was that you placed your caches, and maybe some of the mistakes that you'd made along the way, and that kind of stuff will help other cachers. Now, Bad Cop and Country FF604 are both saying in the chat room that they were about 100, and Geek Boy from Illinois said that his was about 300 before his first hide. So these are people who had done their first hide a little bit later than most, and as a general rule, I try to tell people, about 100 is a good spot to actually place your first cache. By that point, you've usually found enough variety that you're going to have a little bit better experience.
Well, and I mean, I know it's tough to, when you first start caching, you know, because it's one of those things that is a really addicting sport or hobby or whatever you want to classify it as. It is addicting. And so you have this tendency to want to give back to the community and, you know, how, especially I think that if you're one of those people who've discovered caching on your own, where you have not had someone say, hey, this is what caching is, and that you've gone out with them on a couple of finds, you're going to have more people that are just wanting to put back in and only usually put back what they've seen. And so they want to give back right away. Whereas the people I think that are introduced to it by somebody else are more likely to let the other person know that they're placing a cache, and hopefully the other person says, hey, it's, you know, either too early or, hey, I'll help you and make it good. But I know I find myself making a lot of judgment calls. I don't think we should necessarily have a hard limit on the placing of it, just because of the fact that like you said, Daryl, you don't know what it could be, what their situation is.
Definitely. And Cache Advance brought up another point in the chat room, which is, she only had about 40 caches under her belt when she did her first hide in 2002. But at that point, there were so few other caches out there that you weren't going to get 100 caches in a month, let alone in a day. Now, you know, not everyone has 100 caches around them that they could do a day-long run. But, you know, we did a casual, you know, almost afternoon of caching this last weekend and got 54 caches. You know, that's, let's see, we got up there about 10 o'clock, wrapped up about 6. So, you know, an 8-hour day of caching and we got 54 caches. And that's just not something that you would have done, even when I got started in 2005, that was rough.
No, and I think what would happen if you did set a hard limit on it where, you know, the system wouldn't let you place it is I think that you'd find people that it would just become a people would leave and they wouldn't like the system. You know, because you just don't know. I mean, it'd be a lot more regulating for someone to say to Groundspeak, oh, yeah, I've actually been caching for years. I just had a different name or you know, or whatnot. It would be a lot more regulation. It'd be a lot more structured. People already don't like the fact that Groundspeak makes the rules a lot of times. And I think that if they set those kind of limits on it, people would just would leave.
Definitely. And you have to think resources too, because these are all volunteer reviewers. They're spending a lot of time at, you know, no compensation really to go and hide or to take care of checking all these hides. There's only so much they can do. If they know the area, chances are they're going to do a better job than if they don't. But what are they really going to be able to do to prevent a bad hide from getting out there? And the only things that I can think of, like, you know, first couple of hides at least, submit a photo or something like that. You know, it's a lot of extra work for everyone, and you're going to discourage caching in general.
Which, I mean, some people might say that that might not be a bad thing. I mean, you got, if there's less caches that are being placed, there's less spew of caches, that there might be better quality caches. In reality, this is going to be an all-opinion show anyways. I don't think there's any, you know, hard, fast rules. I mean, because I'm on both sides of the fence. You know, I see caches that are placed every week that have people that haven't found very many caches, but yet I know when I see that, I'm always, like I said, like, oh, this is not good. But at the same time, I got to keep thinking there's, you know, there may be a reason behind it, you know?
Well, and my best action that I've seen so far has been the monthly meet and greets in different regions, where when you have a new hider, you can say, hey, you know, thanks for the hide. Here are some things that you might want to look at for the next one. Or, you know, this is potentially going to be a problem. You know, feel free to come to the next meet and greet. They're every month. You know, here's the schedule. Here's how to find it. And we'd love to chat with you then. And just by getting them in, even if they're not talking directly about their particular caches, there's so much conversation at these meet and greets about the really cool, clever hide. You know, maybe they'll make an extra trip out to find this really, you know, bizarre hide that someone had on private property with permission, maybe, and see how something is done when you can really take the time and do it well. That motivates them to do a little bit better hide the next time.
Well, but Cache Advance does bring up a good point too, that many newbies have some fantastic new hides. That, you know, a lot of times those are people that are thinking way outside the box. As long as they're thinking, you know, good quality stuff, they may have some really good finds. I know around here one of our best cache placers as far as quality hides, I would say, or challenging hides, is one who I don't have the stats right off hand, but I know he wasn't very many hides before he placed it, and he's a fairly new cacher, but he's got some awesome cache hides. And I mean, I know that he always, but here's the thing too, and it's, I actually kind of find it funny, because he asks me a lot of times what I think of his caches, which is great. I think it's awesome, you know, because I've been in on the program, you know, the program. I've been caching longer than he has, and so I can give him, you know, advice on what I think the hides are. And, you know, I think it's a great idea. He asks me, you know, I don't even necessarily be me. I don't really care. But, you know, he even still now he's placed, I don't know how many caches, but he always asks me, you know, what do you think of my find? What should I do this different? Should I do that different? And I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and we've done some quality control finds on a couple of our caches that we were a little bit questionable about what we should do. Well, we'll just print out the cache page, give it to a couple of our caching friends and say, hey, go find this and let us know if anything needs to be corrected or tweaked or whatever. But one of the interesting things about these newer finders is they don't come into caching with any preconceived notions of what a cache is that might limit them, like those of us who have found a few caches. If all you found are 100 ammo boxes, then you're going to think that you have to put out an ammo box. You know, not absolutely, but it's one of those, you're going to play something similar to what you've found if you're going to go and hide a cache after 100, 200 finds.
Yeah.
So by not having any finds, they might have thought of something that was really cool that they built when they were a kid for Halloween or something. You know, it doesn't really have to be anything that anyone has seen. It could just be a cool concept that they came up with. And that's how we found some of the more original hides, was from people who got into it a little bit, really kind of didn't like the hides that they found, and spent a lot of time and effort building something really cool that was more like what they wanted to find and what they were hoping geocaching would be.
Yeah, and I mean, that is kind of the great thing about geocaching. I mean, there are some rules, but again, you know, you can pretty much play the game like you want to play it. And so, I mean, that's the good and the bad of geocaching. And I think that it's going to bite you in the butt sometimes, because you're going to get people who really, really don't think. And I guess that's probably I don't know how to get away from this. You know, that's probably my problem, where I'm kind of fearful of becoming the bad cop, if you will, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, because I don't want to be a geocaching cop. I'm not a reviewer. I don't want to be a reviewer. And I'm, you know, I it's not my place to sit and say, this is a really crappy hide, you know, because I don't want to discourage them. And I don't want to, I don't know. Do you have any good ways of contacting people when they have a bad hide? I mean, I don't know how to do it without completely hurting their feelings. And I guess maybe that's, you know, something I need to work on.
It's always really hard to through email, because you just don't have a good sense of emotion like you do in a face-to-face or even a telephone call. So you do have to really watch how you phrase things. And it always helps to reread your email a couple of times. But I think that's the real trick, is never post criticisms or advice on the cache page. Do it as a note to the individual. Now, if it's really bad, you know, you might have to get the reviewer involved, you know, if it's on private property or something. But even then, I really hate to contact the reviewer right away. I like to contact the cache owner directly first and say, look, this is a problem. You might need to take care of this, you know.
Well,
if it's something less, you know, less substantial, like, you know, they use a container that's going to fall apart, you know, hey, thanks for, you know, placing the hide. I had a good time trying to find it. However, you might want to rethink the container. You know, I'd be happy to help you out in the future. If you ever need to bounce any ideas off me, you know, contact me this way. And also, you know, we'd love to meet you at the meet and greet.
Well, and I think that's probably my bad taste in my mouth from the cacher that at the very beginning of my caching, basically he said, you know, this sucks. I'm a person that knows about bridges, and you should never have placed this under this bridge. It's going to get washed away. And basically made me feel stupid. And then everything else that I've read about him, he's basically thinks he's the caching god, like that he owns caching. And I don't, that it really has had a bad taste in my mouth. You know, everything, all of his cache pages say whatever his name is approved, and it's like, you know, to me, you're, I don't know, and that's a whole different story. But I mean, that's probably why I'm getting bad taste in my mouth as far as contacting other caches about their hides.
Yeah, you always have a few bad apples, and you know, self-appointed monarchies are always a problem.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that. In summing up here, and if anyone else has anything to say before we close the show here, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Again, that's 724-444-7444, and the ID is 7525. Or again, our voicemail is 206-350-3GPS. You know, I guess in closing, I would say that there shouldn't be a hard limit, but I guess maybe take them under your wing, but it's hard when they're not showing up. I guess it's all, again, in how you want to play the game.
Well, and I do think that there is some merit to, rather than placing a hard limit, you have to take an online quiz, you know, something that's based on the rules, you know, go through, ask a few questions just to confirm, you know, kind of a opt into hiding kind of thing. And really, I think that's about the most that GroundSpeak would be able to do.
So pretty much like when you get your learner's permit, you have to go to the driver's motor vehicle and take a little quiz and you get your permit. Because, I mean, obviously you've not been driving long enough to be able to definitively say, I can drive, you know, because you're just new at it. But you can take a test and they can prove that you know the concepts and then you can drive. I think that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking, basically just something to prove that you've at least read and understood the caching guidelines.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would get a little bit perturbed, but I've even forgotten a lot of the guidelines, or they've changed and I've missed the changes, or, you know, keep forgetting that they changed, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe that's a topic we need to cover here on the show. I mean, maybe as a follow-up to this show, as far as the hiding guidelines.
Oh, definitely. I'd love to get someone from Groundspeak on and chat about what are the guidelines and what some of the things are that they've seen that we should avoid, when we make our hides.
True, true. Well, I think that we've pretty well covered this topic tonight. I think that, obviously everyone's going to have their opinions. And if you do, feel free to give us a call on our voicemail line, 206-350-3GPS. That way we can hear from more people. And again, like Daryl said, tell us how many caches you had placed before or found before you placed your first cache.
Now, going back to that, now hindsight's 2020, obviously, what would you have changed in your first hide?
I would say, to be 100% honest, I don't even remember offhand which my first hide was. It's been let me take a look at that here, because it has been quite a long time since I remember which ones that I've hidden. So give me one second here. What would you have changed?
Well, mine, I had actually planned on it being a series of hides. It was a coin hotel kind of thing, a coin rest stop, but I called it First Geo Savings and Loan Troy Branch. And the goal had been I was going to try to kind of template this and put a bunch of them out. And instead of having a logbook, you had a deposit slip, that kind of stuff, deposit withdrawal slip. And it was really kind of fun and cool, but it just ended up being a whole lot of extra effort for what turned out to be, really it was a pretty boring cache because I was going for that travel bug concept where it's easy on, easy off, 5 minutes in and out, you're done, so that you could swap travelers. And that whole travel bug hotel kind of concept faded fairly quickly after I got involved. I'd say probably by 2007, those kind of just got relegated to average cache status versus the special cache status where it was a cache you'd go back to a couple of different times. And in large part, it was because there were so many of the travel bug hotels around. That would have been my thing is, don't plan on doing the series of caches like that. That's going to take a lot of extra work. Just plan on something a little simpler for a series. Or if you have something cool to do as a first cache, plan on it being that cache and not a whole bunch of them.
Well, I just looked it up. My first cache that I had placed was actually a webcam cache. And actually, there is nothing that I would have changed with that one. It went over well. There really wasn't much to change about it. It was a little bit of a tough one because you actually had to guide the camera down to the street level. It was one in Chicago, so you had to kind of guide it down to where it was at. So it's a real tough camera cache, actually. However, the camera went down and I had to archive it. The second one that I had placed was one that the one that actually was so criticized by that guy, and then the cache actually did wash away. So in theory, the guy was right. He did actually. I probably shouldn't have placed it where I did, but so my first cache, I probably would have done a little bit more. I would say research. I was really good with my coordinates. I took a lot of coordinates and averaged them together and did things like that. But I would have probably done some more research as far as what makes a good cache and what doesn't.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of where my quality control thing can lead into it, too, where I send out some of my friends with some of these hides. And Geek Boy is actually saying, too, it's always a good idea to have someone read over your printout and see if there's any errors that might cause problems. But if you have someone who can check your hide for you, it really does help, and just it gives me the comfort of knowing that I'm not going to publish something that's going to be just off the wall. You know, Dree, when she had placed one of her caches, had made the mistake of putting in placeholder coordinates while she got her final coordinates and hit publish with those placeholder coordinates. So it was some good like 50 miles away. And that's something, obviously, whoever would have quality controlled it would have noticed that. But again, this is one of those, it's not a big hide. It's a nice, simple hide, really straightforward. So we didn't even really think that we needed to do a quality control check on it.
Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. If you found any value in the content of this podcast, please consider helping us to make this show sound even better by visiting www.geocachingpodcast.info and clicking the donate button. We realize that there are many different places that you can spend your hard-earned cash, and if you decide to donate, you'll be given a link to our Plus feed. Thank you. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can call our voicemail line at 206-3503-GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.